All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse, your weekly dose of insider DevOps trends, AWS news, and Terraform insights. Mostly sourced from our suite of ops community, plus the live Q&A that you can't find anywhere else. It's November 15th, 2023. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder and CEO of Cloud Posse. We are a DevOps accelerator for startups that helps teams who are overwhelmed with AWS. We do this by using our over 200 Terraform modules that have been battle tested and downloaded over 10 million times. No matter where you find yourself on this journey, we're here to help your startup launch better products faster and free up your bandwidth for innovation so that you can nail your value delivery every time. And if you or your team has been banging your head against the wall with underperforming infrastructure, just head over to cloudposse.com/quiz, answer a few quick questions, and we'll chart a roadmap for success free. Worst case, you get a clear roadmap for shoring up your infrastructure. Best case, we co-build it with you and empower your DevOps team in 90 days or less. How can we maximize today's session? First off, our format is very informal. Engage as much as you'd like. Ask questions. If you're curious about any of our open source tools or modules, go for it. For those on the recording, we host these calls live, so don't miss out. Just go to cloudposse.com/office hours. Again, cloudposse.com/office hours to register. Now, I do have one ask. If you find any portion of today's session interesting, share it with your team. Just head over to youtube.com/cloudposse, and you'll find the video there posted in a few hours after the session. Or send us a short testimonial about the value you're getting in Slack. Just go to slack.cloudposse.com. Remember, we're not simply creating content here. We're building a community. So with that said, let's get into some announcements. So first one, I haven't had a chance to dig into it. Matt, I don't know, you shared it with me if you looked at it. Looks like CloudFront has expanded a security dashboard. So you can get better insights into what's going across, happening across your edge network.
Yeah, I'm a little bit, I mean, it seems to be exactly what you said, like it pulls together a bunch of things around CloudFront and stats and presents them and, you know, all those kind of things from a networking content delivery, you know, perspective. Like it makes a lot of sense to me. I'm a little bit confused why this isn't rolled into like Security Hub, seeing that like that's what Security Hub is, like, you know, is a single pane of glass, or supposed to be a single pane of glass across your organization. But I guess I should just give up on trying to make sense of Amazon's positioning of all their security products, because it's hella confusing to me like every time I look at it. So,
yeah, or at a minimum underneath a WAF section, as opposed to under an individual product and showing its WAF usage.
So, yeah, I didn't have too much other to add. I didn't actually get to kick the tires on it. I only got to read the blog post. So don't have much more to add about it.
All right. Thanks for that. Next one is for anyone using GitHub Actions. One of the nice features that I don't see used that often is the ability to specify specific services within your job. So in this case, it's an example of provisioning a container. A free version of Oracle is the example here that you can then run as part of your tests. And what's cool about that is that will live the life cycle of that is different from the life cycle of your steps. So multiple steps can be using that backing service. For example, one running migrations and another one running your application tests. Another announcement here is, this was cool. This was shared by somebody in the SweetOps community, Pepe. So Slalom is a very large consulting organization out there, and they've been adopting some of the strategies that we use here at Cloud Posse as well with components. So here's an example, component library of Terraform root modules, showing how it can be used across multiple clouds. So with AWS, with Azure, with GCP, and you can go into any one of those and see some reference examples here as well, implementing a lot of different components. This one was shared, was it by Vlad, I believe? Maybe it was talked about last week, but it is exciting that GitHub Actions will be getting usage metrics. every single other CI/CD system out there has some modicum of metrics. GitHub Actions has zero unless you integrate it with something like Datadog. So this is planned for next quarter. These often drift, though.
Yeah. For what it's worth, Datadog's CI/CD pane or whatever that they have there is pretty good, actually. It gives you a lot of because not only does it give you like runtime and like you're showing right there, like flame graphs of what the longest are, failure rates, you know, all that kind of thing, but it also makes every deployment an event in Datadog. So if something happens, it's real easy to correlate, like, oh, I see a new deployment happened, and then all my CPU spiked, you know, 27 minutes later or whatever it was, you know, something like that. You can usually correlate it pretty easy by looking at some of that stuff.
Yeah, that's really cool. And this is obviously leaps and bounds beyond anything one could expect from a dashboard coming out of GitHub for usage metrics.
I don't know why we have that low expectation of them, but I agree.
Yeah. Well, does Microsoft have a product like Looker that Google has?
Microsoft has like Azure DevOps, which is basically like
Right, but that's an end-to-end suite ultimately to be phased out or replaced by or merged into GitHub and GitHub Actions. When I say Looker, this is, you know, they're like Metabase, they're Snowflake, they're whatever, they're analytics. They must have one. I just don't know what it's called. I've seen Looker nicely embedded into product. I think this would be a cool opportunity for Microsoft to embed their metrics platform or whatever into GitHub so you can create custom reports on things running there. But a teaser for this cool, powerful BI product that they have.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft has a bunch of BI tools all around, like SQL Server and like their entire like suite there. But I haven't caught up on that in years now at this point, so I can't speak intelligently on that part.
Yeah.
Michael in the chat highlighted Power BI.
Yeah, Power BI, right. That's the one.
Yeah.
So, does Power BI have an embedded mode?
I don't think so. It's pretty, well, again, my knowledge is dated, so maybe.
Yeah, I shared that information to say it's comparable, probably the closest comparison I have to Looker. But as far as embedding it, yeah, I'm not sure. You could probably export the visualization somehow and embed them that way, but I don't know how much interaction you're going to get out of it.
So where I saw this, I recalled now, was in OpsGenie. So in OpsGenie, they embed Looker, and that's how you can dig deeper into like all your incident metrics and stats. RB shared a bunch of interesting posts. One was on how certain attack vectors can basically fan out almost like a worm and infect other actions by affecting the supply chain itself, basically other dependent actions. The actual methods of exploitation aren't anything we haven't seen before. From what I could tell, repo jacking, compromising NPM packages, opening PRs to actions that seem, harmless, but actually introduce a injection attack and so forth. But the other one that I was more excited about was this one. I thought this was an interesting one. So I guess GitHub has a separate org. I didn't actually verify. This is by GitHub. Ironically, it doesn't have the verified badge here, but I take it that it is by GitHub. This actions permissions action has two parts to it, a monitor and an advisor. And, you know, over the years, there's been a lot of these tools for AWS and IAM to calculate least privileges. Well, this is a tool to calculate least privileges for GitHub Actions. And it works by setting up a monitor at front, as one of your first steps in your workflow or in your action. And then at the end, having a advisor that will showcase which permissions were needed as part of this execution so that you can tailor the permissions like this in your workflow or action. The benefit with this is that if a vulnerability were to be introduced into your action at some point in the future, by having the restricted permissions, the blast radius of that attack are minimized.
Although you can also just do it the hard way, which is how I usually do it, is set the repo permissions as restrictive as possible to none. And then I have to iterate 5 times until I actually get my GitHub action to work by adding the appropriate permissions. And then I eventually figure out what it actually needs to do to do what it's doing. So, but this is definitely much slicker than my 27 failed runs because I didn't have the right permissions.
Also, this is a nice example or showcase of using job summaries. So job summaries are something we've been leveraging more and more at Cloud Posse, and it's a great way to surface in a very readable, user-friendly manner information about the run. So here it's a simple little job summary. It would look exactly, well, this I'm showing, this is a screenshot here of what you would see under the GitHub Actions menu. And then you see a job summary here, and it posts what you should just literally copy pasta into your workflow. Cool. Let's see, next announcement.
Before you move into scathing, I guess I'll quite, however you pronounce, I've never known how to pronounce that thing, but anyway, I think it's worth noting, like, the GitHub Enterprise, not Enterprise, Universe was last week, right? And they made a bunch of announcements and, you know, all those kind of things. And it was pretty telling to me that the only thing they care about anymore is AI. So, like, there was, like, every single announcement was about Copilot and some variation of Copilot. There were zero announcements about Git, about Actions, about anything else. And even what's their CEO, Thomas Denke or whatever his name is, even put out a tweet that basically said, like, GitHub was built on the back of Git, and now it's a new day, and we're on top. Now we're building on top of AI, kind of thing. Like, basically, like, we don't care about Git anymore, was kind of like his, like, the message. And I saw a lot of people's reactions to that were really, yeah, there it is. A lot of people's reactions to that were really negative. But if you look at this, not a single announcement about what was their core product, you know, before this announcement. So it's a little telling.
Yeah.
On where they think they can make money.
Yeah. Can I just get some folders? Can I organize my repo?
Maybe
the GitHub universe.
Yeah. If you GitHub ask Copilot folders chat.
For repositories now. Sorry, okay. I just
maybe Copilot chat will tell you how to get that done if you pay the extra, I believe, $49 or $39 per user per in your GitHub organization on top of what you pay for GitHub Enterprise for Copilot chat.
Yeah, it very expensive. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, thanks for bringing it up. I do have one announcement that came out of that, I believe, which was a positive thing for Terraform as a language. It has seen 36% year-over-year growth. So that's cool. That's a sign that Terraform's growing and in adoption and usage. And also surprising for me to see on the list of all the languages being used on GitHub, how high up it is on that list. So that's a good sign as well. Also, it's an interesting sign because it is its own language. It's not like you can easily tell, like, how Pulumi is doing, because it's just a framework built on top of all the other languages. Interesting. I mean, when Ruby was the darling of every tech company out there, and it's barely making the list anymore.
Yeah, I'm.
Dubious.
I know. I'm sort of like the 36% year-over-year growth seems crazy to me. Like, which probably means, given how much of a base there is of Terraform code out there, it probably means that we're not doing a good enough job of reusing things that already exist. Like, people are writing a lot of their own crap for no reason whatsoever.
The nature that it's not a very dry language out of the box is a advantage for these stats.
Yeah, could be. I don't know what do they actually calculate. Is it like lines of code or
Yeah, I was wondering the
files with
same,
or
contributions, a number of people contributing. I don't know. I didn't look into what the number actually means.
that's
Has Cloud Posse modules seen a 36% growth by chance?
I can't say I've
In terms
felt
of
it
usage.
in our pocketbook, but no, that'd be interesting
We
to
have
hear.
that. We have the data, like from the registry, that we could figure that out.
Yeah,
But
we have the registry data. Yeah. Actually, that's a good thing I should add to the list of questions if people have ideas. I'll get to it in a second. All right, anything more on this before I move on?
my mission goes
Minor
pretty.
one just was shared that, Quay has seen better days. It had two major outages in the past week, I believe. One was it switched into read-only mode, or was moved into read-only mode. I could only imagine the nightmare that was brewing behind that for them to make such a drastic change. But then it was down again, on 2 days later.
You might want to
It
take
is
also a
still
quick
down.
look.
And it's still, I know the status page was basically down before when I was looking at it, but it works now again. Somebody was saying something.
I said also have a look at what GitHub is pushing on status updates. It's one degradation after another. So basically, what Quake does in a day, they do in a week or something like that. We have an RSS feed for all those updates, and it's daily that we at least get multiple updates regarding pull requests are degraded, API is degraded, operations are degraded, actions are degraded.
They're having their kind of Twitter moment for the past year or two here, where it's like a fail whale a few times a week.
Yeah, but I'm at least glad that they do some proper status updates versus some other companies that when it's outage, it's taking days, then you get some first appearance like, oh yeah, something might be wrong.
It's also a way of giving developers the time to have coffee breaks, water cooler conversations. Otherwise, we'd just be workaholics. So I think it's not bad.
I also think like comparing the scale of the two company systems is like, is crazy. I mean, like GitHub is just the number of things that they're managing is crazy. And most of what they announce, and I'm definitely not a GitHub apologist here, but most of it is performance degradation or small little localized outages across things. It's rare that they have like full blown outages across the, you know, across the board. I'm not saying it never happens, but it's definitely rare that happens. I don't know. I think that they, you know, they've definitely in the last year or so, maybe slightly more than a year, have definitely had a significant uptick in outages. But they still do a pretty good job given every developer in the world almost is committing to and relying on them to do their work like on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, but then again, it's also quite worrisome if you depend on the Git workflows to operate your normal operations, deployments, stuff like that. If you're waiting for a fix to be deployed and then all the related dependencies are failing, Spacelift, CircleCI, whatever you are connecting to those GitHub pull requests and builds. It's getting quite scary. So it's also time to have a proper look at those things as well.
What about GitHub Enterprise for you? Self-hosted GitHub Enterprise server?
Yeah, but then you lose the managed part. So it's always a trade-off.
Plus, all of us, I'm sure, can do a much better job of keeping systems 100% available than the thousands of engineers that GitHub has working on these things.
Yeah, and probably be able to connect to their Azure co-workers who have some experience as well.
Yeah.
But it shows how dependent are we becoming on certain things out there.
Yeah. It's, two central points of failure right now for probably 80% of tech companies, GitHub and AWS.
Yeah.
I would also say Google, because a ton of people's authentication is tied in through Google Apps.
Yeah, I've seen some things in the past where because of their way of working and the monorepo structure, I had some things in the past where they did some boo-boo on some authentication stuff. So basically that meant that the whole Google Cloud environment was also unresponsive, not working. Stuff like that. So if you say about self-hosting GitHub Enterprise and then run it on AWS or Google Cloud, not sure if that's really going to improve.
Yeah. All right. Next announcement, just a minor one to kind of toot our own horn. We did upgrade finally to AWS Advanced tier, so very happy about that. It's been an initiative here to get to become an AWS Advanced consulting partner.
Nice. What does that bring you or us?
Yeah, what it does is it opens up a lot of funding opportunities, ways that Amazon can help subsidize implementations on projects. And other resources, partner resources that Amazon has. There are also a lot of other partner programs that require you first get to AWS Advanced tier before you move to the next. I don't want to misstate something, but there are some things. For example, you can't do AWS map migrations. Migration accelerator program or something. I forget exactly what it stands for.
And just a offhand remark, you know where it's coming from. Does it also help to improve the throughput time for upgrading account limit upgrades for fresh accounts?
I wish. That's really your relationship or a customer's relationship with AWS themselves and their account reps. We've seen it I think we've seen it all across the board, but GitHub Enterprise customers under a GitHub Enterprise, AWS Enterprise agreement, get the fastest responses there.
So we've noted.
Yeah. That's what I've noticed as well, Eric, is had someone I was working with that had an enterprise account. And in like 2 hours, we got all their limits increased by 10x. Like we submitted a limit increase for VCPs of 64. And then they just get like 1,000 without like us asking for it. And then on my account, I can barely get 32. And that takes like a day. And I appreciate sharing on you don't get the perk when you're partner, because we were exploring that, trying to see if that would help on the account limits, because so, we've literally burned a week.
Just to be clear, I'm saying we do not get a perk with that.
Yes. Sorry. I appreciate you confirming.
Yeah.
We're looking at going after that for that one little thing, trying to see if we can make it easier. So when we create a new account and have faster limit increases, it'd be nice.
Yeah.
And actually, quick tip around that. We found after about 50 calls, literally with AWS activating accounts, I figured out a process that works pretty well, at least for my team. We throw in our credit card details on the brand new account. So even though we have consolidated billing underneath the organization, we add our credit card details. Apparently that helps with the fraud detection. And then the other thing we do is we join a live chat and then we initiate a activation call. And then we basically let it burn in for about 3 days. And we found that to help expediting all the upgrades.
So our go-to has just been enable business class support in the root account, which is usually where you want to raise the limits. That then you get the prioritized support. I would say it happened very recently with somebody asking something just now that didn't help, but that has been the exception rather than the rule.
Oh, so you do it on the organization root account, or do you do it in
the account? Yeah, the org root account. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. We've all the requests that I'm referring to, we've been logging into each sub account. So we've done like over 50 accounts so far. And as I mentioned, each one is like a call and a verification. It's been a grueling process.
I guess it depends. Yeah, you're not wrong. It depends on which limits you need to raise. For us, the limit we often need to raise when we start a new project is the account limit, how many accounts you can create, and that is locked at 12. And you have to do that at the org level to bump that number up. There's another thing you can do as an AWS, both the customer, but also as an AWS partner is, first thing you do is you open the support ticket, then you go into ACE, so the CRM for AWS partners. And when you've registered the opportunity there and it's accepted, you're gonna be able to see the AWS reps that are related or associated with that account. Then you can contact the account rep for that, post the support issue that was created, and ask them if they can escalate this for you. And then they almost always say yes. It's in their best interest to do that. And that helps too. I think that's probably for the same reasons you say, gets around some of the fraud concerns, because it's coming from the right channel.
Was not across that APN feature. Thank you. Sorry, Matt.
No, I was also going to say that one other thing that I've encountered before is that, and I'm guessing you might be hitting this, is that if you have like a large number of accounts, AWS has like a spending limit that they put on every account that they're comfortable with, like from a credit perspective. Mm-hmm. And every time like you add a new account with a bunch of resources, you're probably crossing that threshold, which someone has to then review and approve before they do that. So there's a company I worked with before that said like they were able to share with their account rep, here's what our anticipated like growth is going to look like over the next, you know, year or whatever. So can you do a credit review on us and basically like get our spending limits and all those kind of things bumped so that we don't run into delays when we want to do that? And I know of at least one company that was successful getting that done like through their AWS rep. And then they said that when they did that, like all of their limits went up like across the board of what they were actually allowed to deploy. So
one of the things we've had happen is I'll create a number of accounts and first things look good. I get like five vCPUs from EC2. And then 2 days later, they just take them all away. I just lose four and I only have one to use. And then I'm fighting to get the original five back. And it might be a trigger with their fraud detection algorithms, but yeah, so that's also been absolute worst case. I think it's taken us like 2.5 weeks to get an account set up.
I didn't mean to change topic. If there was anything else on that, how to get limits expedited on AWS.
No, not at all. I appreciate all the tips there. Thanks a lot, guys.
Cool. These were shared by Matt Calhoun in the Zoom chat. This looks interesting. Nice use of Terraform to provision a CloudWatch dashboard. This one showcasing your ECR usage.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty cool. I also like that it's by Porsche, like, you know, the car company. They're actually they're obviously doing a lot on AWS. If you look at some of the repos that they have and some of the topics they cover.
The only one module published right now.
Yeah. I wasn't suggesting necessarily that they're like publishing a lot. I'm just saying that they're doing a lot on like AWS machine learning and a bunch of interesting, you know, a bunch of interesting things. And I think some of their newer cars are even using like IoT to do like tracking metrics and things like inside the cars. And then they use all sorts of machine learning, AWS machine learning capabilities to analyze the data and optimize things. It's pretty cool. I was reading about that when I came across the ECR dashboard. That's how I found it.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. I'd like to do more of that. Just looking at what they're doing, I'm always curious to see what projects are doing. And I see they're also using TFSec. I know a lot of people implement TFSec just like this, and that's fine. I guess this is the one that does it. And this is what I think is really cool with this TFSec action. If I am correct, let's see here. No, this is not the one. So if you look at how to implement TFSec in their blog post, they have a much better implementation here. And I did not click on the right. It's using TFSec with the Serif faction and uploading that to CodeQL. And when you do it that way, then it shows up in the security tab on your repo. And I believe probably you can see those things at an org level as well. So that would be my recommendation.
That's really weird, because isn't Aqua Security who makes TFSec?
It is.
Yeah.
No. So they're using this is one of the underlying actions. So the implementation is, I guess they have two implementations. They have one that does it with the Serif format, and then they have one that's just plain action.
But it's in a different GitHub org. That's what I was looking at. It's in TFSec / instead of Aqua Security / So maybe they like moved out to their own.
Yeah.
Other actions, maybe they moved out to their own repo.
That's an interesting.
I mean, to their own org.
Versus.
Yeah, the other one was called TFSec / TFSec. Oh, huh. It redirects. Interesting. So
it looked like they had it in their own org for some amount of time and went over here.
Yeah. I wonder how that's working, given what we were talking about.
I was going to say, is this the perfect segue into the office hours question I wanted to ask people for advice? It could be, I think.
This case is also, they are moving a lot of their components into the Trify big overarching project.
Mm.
Because you see a lot of references from other bits and pieces. Hey, this is now included in Trivi and stuff like that. So that might be the cause of the move to really centralize everything.
Yeah. Hmm.
I'm making it more like a Aqua Security branded open source project instead of a standalone one.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, this is a, I have a related question to this, and it's something I've been mulling over for the last, few weeks at a minimum, or taking more seriously, which is this move to adopting multiple GitHub organizations under GitHub Enterprise. And for a private company, for a company that only does private things for the most part, or is starting fresh with open source, no big deal. Just do whatever you want to do. If you are a company who's been operating in a single GitHub organization for, 7+ years, and now want to go to GitHub Enterprise and move things into multiple organizations, and you do mostly open source, I don't know how to do it because I've found so many limitations. So one of the things we would like to do is create. So let me talk about some of the problems we have at Cloud Posse. And for anybody else building large open source projects like what we have, we're up to hundreds of repositories. I thought I used to say here somewhere. 531 repositories. Some of those are private. Many are archives at this point, but there's still a lot there. And the problem is discoverability. Sure, we can narrow things down in these ways. And by the way, what are mirrors? I'd never seen that type before. Anybody seen? How do I create a mirror?
I'm assuming that refers to you have a repo in GitLab or Bitbucket, and then you have it synced. So it's like pulling from
possibly,
another source.
But I didn't think GitHub had. I know GitLab supports mirroring.
Yeah, I've never actually done it.
I didn't
it.
Know GitHub supports mirroring.
Yeah, I've never done it here. Usually,
unless that's an enterprise feature.
I can check on my account and let you know, but I haven't used it before.
So that's one thing. One thing that I think is annoying is the default type is all, and yet you can have a lot of archived repos that don't make sense to have there anymore. So I think it should be everything minus that. So we also have then, we have dozens and dozens of GitHub related repos that have nothing really to do with the hundreds of Terraform projects that we have and have nothing. Well, those have something to do, but are different from these things that we have called Terraform components. And we have, workflow repositories, which we're working on something to do with that. My point is that we would like to break these things apart. And the obvious thing would be move Terraform modules to a Terraform organization, move GitHub Actions to a GitHub organization. Only we see tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of downloads of all these modules every single day. And the Terraform registry doesn't support moving modules. And I don't know if Terraform's gonna support GitRefs moving. My guess is that's also gonna be iffy. But most people are using registry syntax these days anyways. So what do we do? And then we have the same problem with GitHub Actions. We want to move all of our GitHub Actions into a separate organization and manage those. But GitHub Actions also, for security reasons, doesn't support redirects. So it's like we have to create like a multi-year plan here where we let everything be where it is, start moving them over to the new organizations, but we can't move the actual repos over. So we'd have to create new repos, but then we lose the star counts issues and pull request history. And if we moved them over and created a stub repo here, people doing repository pinning, they're going to get bit. All their actions are going to stop working. And if we, in the Terraform registry, you know, if we unpublish these modules and republish them, we're going to lose all of our stats, which is going to impact discoverability of our modules and some legitimacy of them as perceived by newcomers. So I just don't understand how to migrate repositories between organizations when you do open source. Suggestions, anyone?
Any luck on getting folders from GitHub?
Yeah, no, I don't know if I shared that before, but
you mentioned it earlier,
I found a post from September, which basically is from GitHub support saying, yeah, people have been asking for this forever and the product managers are basically against it. So don't hold your breath.
With regards to those GitHub stats, if you're able to keep the reference, with regards to the Terraform stats, if you're able to keep the reference the same in the code, I imagine your stats would just immediately repopulate very quickly. So folks like myself that are using your modules, it might reset, but I imagine, correct me if I'm wrong, like within a week, you'll be back to a reasonable number of pulls is my assumption.
Yeah, I mean, they'll climb up. You'll lose the all-time history, like 100 million downloads or whatever, which is a vanity metric, let's say.
We can just write a script that just downloads our modules like all day and all night for a few days, and then we'll just artificially the stats. It's not that hard.
Yeah, no, that's true. I was going to say, one of the ideas there, if we're anyways going to move things, should we do something to have more control over the register, or, push people towards a registry that we can control? And not have that problem in the future was one of the ideas. What about, creating a module whose sole purpose is just to emit warnings that this module is moving to a new home? Was one of my ideas, doing something similar for GitHub Actions.
But that's not going to help you. That's not going to help you if people are pinned to a particular SHA, though.
Right. It only helps for people who, after they upgrade from that point on. Yeah.
With regards to the registry, in terms of the Terraform registry, there are a lot of limitations, I believe, with the standard Terraform CLI. So assuming that you're not catering towards OpenTofu and you still want to support the standard CLI, when you move the registry, there's like some stuff hard-coded into how the CLI operates. So you basically have to go all in on your own registry, meaning the customer, whoever the end user of your modules would also, I believe they have to migrate everything.
They would have to migrate. But if we're anyway saying, dude, you guys have to migrate, should we migrate to something where we wouldn't have to have that, be concerned about that in the future? So if we decided to publish from another organization or multiple repos to, to the same registry, that would be possible.
Oh, I think when you do that migration, they're migrating everything, not just the modules that they're using with you, but I believe it's something hard-coded. So when you do...
The source where you say like Cloud Posse / whatever, you just put a host name before the Cloud Posse part and it uses that host name as the registry.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize you could do that on a module level.
Yeah, okay, for sure.
It works.
And you can actually... Software. You can actually do it in your Terraform CLI config as well, where you can say get / like Cloud Posse foo, is like from this registry, and you can point it to a different, like you can wildcard like certain modules or certain pieces to all come from like, from another registry as well, if you just distribute your Terraform CLI that way.
Got it.
So yeah. I'm not sure what to do about that. I think we'll probably end up upgrading anyways, but not for the reasons we originally had hoped. We're easy wins, and any sort of migration would be a large.
This might be a long shot, but it might be worthwhile to just kind of reach out to HashiCorp and GitHub, their partner team, just see if they'll be able to help. I mean, you folks contribute quite a bit, and I imagine.
We've never gotten any special treatment. We've never gotten any special treatment, despite hoping that we would.
Never hurts to ask. You'll lose a couple hours, but it never hurts to ask.
Yeah, it's worth trying, I guess. Yeah. Oh wait, you signed that manifesto? Yeah, about that.
I was gonna. I don't want to bring that up, but that might be an issue. But you never know.
Yeah.
No one in the community has actually returned anything back to HashiCorp. If you read the
oh yeah, exactly.
Read the statement. So
they can take it.
So we're just all living on the backs of giants.
So Matt, going back to that issue with GitHub mirrors, you're saying there used to be a feature to add a mirror, but it was
you used to be able to just say get remote add --- mirror and then point to like a different spot, and then it would automatically keep your local repo up to date with that remote mirror. But God, it's got to be like 2014, 2013 or something. They stopped supporting it like way back then, like long, long time ago.
Interesting.
I guess it just hasn't worked its way out of the UI yet, because there might actually still be some mirrors set up.
Yeah.
I suspect they realized that they had to run a lot of background processes to actually keep all these mirrors working, like, and bandwidth and like all sorts of things to do it on some sort of automated basis. So
That's why they created runners, so you can do the mirroring on, in a poor man's fashion. Pull from memory.
and pay them for it.
Yeah. But Eric, that might even be a consideration to move to GitLab instead of GitHub. If you're going to have headaches anyway, then go somewhere where you do have folders.
What's the word? The expression, cutting off the nose to spite the face, or something. It's solving one thing and introducing another.
It'd be really hard to work on our GitHub actions in
Exactly. Our GitHub actions would
GitLab.
have to be entirely rethought, and I feel like GitHub and GitHub Actions has far eclipsed capabilities of GitLab pipelines.
Yeah, I think you also lose the discoverability. I believe years ago, when I first came across Cloud Posse in general, I found you because of I searched for code on how to use some resource in AWS. And then it took me to your modules. And then obviously, here I am today. So.
And you can use GitLab Cloud, to be clear. It's just that I don't know. I land on a GitLab cloud project, once every quarter or something. So it's few and far between.
What you perhaps also can consider is getting some stub module here that does the import from the actual location, basically what you're doing already in a
Right.
more turtle-like fashion.
I've thought about that, or even doing stub modules whose sole purpose is just to warn or error that the module has moved.
Yeah,
So
or just doing the import and generating that stuff, but the just pass on to the next module.
yeah,
yeah.
I guess that would be, I guess what one can do is that I mean, it's, I think what it would be a large communication effort, but I guess step one, communicate the proposal, months and months in advance, talk about it, office hours, share it in all the readmes, what's about to happen. Step two, transfer the repo and create new repo, which just has a stub module that warns them, this location has moved to the new location. People who are pinning, it will break. They'll go look what happened. They'll see the module has moved. People who weren't pinning will get a or auto upgrade will get a notice that the module has moved, and bump the version to a new major version or something, so everybody using Renovate bot, Dependa bot, or whatever get the update.
So this might be a bad idea, but you can always force push on old tags, assuming that you're very, very confident
But
that
you
you have
can't.
your
But
version.
it'll be a new
You
SHA.
can't do the SHA. Yeah.
That's the
Oh,
problem.
I mean, look at line 27. A lot of people don't pin to the SHA, so
but a lot of people do. Like, very security conscious people do, because you can't update like the SHA. Like, the SHA is the SHA.
Yeah, I read about that.
Cryptographically secure.
Yeah, definitely agreed. I haven't seen it very often, but do you agree that's a better way to do it?
Yeah, we definitely have a few customers that do it that way, for like that I've worked with, for sure.
Oh, well, cool. Then it makes it quite easy to do so. So it's one of the options. It's basically a single line in the Renovate config that I enabled to make this happen.
Yeah, it's cool. And then it adds a comment with what that SHA should be.
Now, we could game the SHA, like figure out the exact right content to write to each command.
Get to that SHA directly, that is going to be a nightmare, because then you have to do really number crunching, security encryption stuff like mathematics. It's quite hard to reach those exception SHAs.
Just
stick it there and just for the new version, do the other stuff. If your version pinning should be quite okay, and then perhaps do some brownouts, temporarily disable some stuff, and make sure you do a proper period where both sections can be used, and that you promote a new variation before you do the actual redirect and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I guess it's a reversal.